Thank you, Jake. Good morning. My name is Lily Colburn. I am a current freshman at Kansas State University. And though I have attended this fellowship my entire life, I recently became an official member and currently serve as a member at large on the board. Here, we have no required creed. We believe in the liberal ideal that each person find his, her, or their own path or vision, whether it is working towards inner peace, particular social justice goals, or other religious destinations. And so, I welcome you. Whatever path brought you here, I ask that you join us today with an open heart and an open mind. And I greet you with the same. Here at the Unitarian Universalist Fellowship of Manhattan, we have both ministerial and lay-led services. And for the latter, we have members, friends, or guests of the fellowship speak on varieties of topics from their professional or personal experience. Today, under September's theme of vision, we are happy to be joined by those of the congregation who explore the overlap between their personal vision and the collective vision of the fellowship. We invite any visitors and guests to sign our guest book at the welcome table, and if you're curious about what we're about or what Unitarian Universalism in general is like, I encourage you to talk to anyone after the service. Everyone is invited to join us immediately following the service for coffee in the Alsop room down the hall to the left. And today we have a special treat as the religious education program invites us to celebrate the end of summer and some sunshine today and the transition to the new school year with ice cream in the Jupiter room. Before we begin the service, I invite you to look at the program. No one handed me any announcements, but pay attention to the paths and the inserts. There's some good information in there. I didn't read it, honestly. But you should. I also, because of this month's service themes, I invite you to look at the back of your program where you will find the UUFM vision statement. We will be talking about this repeatedly today. So familiarize yourself with it if you haven't already. So for the chalice lighting, I turn to a poem an excerpt from Langston Hughes. He wrote, "Hold fast to dreams, for if they die, life is a broken-winged bird that cannot fly. May this chalice flame challenge us to cherish our dreams, for all things worth doing begin in the courage and inspiration of a dream." I decided to turn the tables and have my mom do it rather than a child. Maybe that was a mistake. Oh. Thank you. Okay. With that, please stand in body or in spirit for hymn number 297, the hymn of the month, Star of Truth. Thank you.
and I tripped as I came up here. Lily's just given me free rein. I can say whatever I want about whatever I want. So last week, the theme of the month is vision. Last week, we did a fun exercise with some of the kids back in the Jupiter room where we tried to draw a dream where one person started it and then another person did the next thing that happened and then another person did the next thing that happened. And there's much debate and people did not agree with the direction this dream was going. As you can imagine, there were some arguments about what activities would happen next and if something really happened or not, things like that. And I kind of wrapped it up for some of the older kids that were in the room talking about the UUFM vision statement. So if you're not familiar with the vision statement, it is on the back of your program. And we came up with this vision statement, I'm looking around, about 5 years ago. Does anybody want to disagree with me? About 5 years ago, okay. And we had actually an entire weekend session, many discussions had gone on with different small groups within the fellowship who meet committees and things like that. And so we did a whole exercise where we all got together for quite a bit of the morning one day. Actually, we might have even stayed through lunch. Drew Venom and Sylvia Beeman and I were given the task of taking all that feedback from all those people and going home and writing a vision statement. And vision statements are supposed to be really short. And so this vision statement is a glorious failure. Drew and Sylvia and I talked and talked and talked, and we stayed up very late into the night, and then we got together very early the next morning, and literally we were to write it overnight and come and present it to the fellowship the next morning as though we could take all of this wondrous energy and feedback and really come up with that brief vision statement. And the more that we talked, the more that we became confident that we could go against the grain and have a non-short vision statement. And the more that we talked, the more that we became comfortable with using some sort of concrete words to hopefully help people visualize what we are trying to do here. And in the end, we actually presented it. If you want to look at the back behind Sandy, who lit our chalice, there's still one little memory of that from 5 years ago. But in the end, when we presented it to the fellowship, we presented it in ascending form. So the way it's presented in the program, a safe haven is kind of the base line of what we're trying to do here, and an incubator is the next step, and then we end with a visible beacon. So each of those clauses is more and more aspirational. So when we presented it to the fellowship, you were to read from the base up, and someday somebody will tear that down and that will be forgotten, but that was one of my brainstorming ideas. So then Jonalu came, right? So we got our first full-time minister. And, of course, she asked to see all these things in her interview process, I'm sure, our mission, our vision statement, anything that we've come up with as a group, as a fellowship. And one of her first comments I remember is, this is really long. But you know what? It's really good. Because depending on the activity we're doing, depending on what we're called to do, each of these statements does call us to action and does call us to kind of be our better selves. So we have not yet retired it. Someday we might, but it's standing firm after about 5 years. Someday we might tweak it or other things like that, but it's worked so far. And I know it's not technically time for the kids to come up, but I'll call up a couple kids by name and then they'll just stay up here for the children's story. But so as part of my exercise and kind of reflecting on this, thinking about what we did last week with the kids, drawing out our dream or whatever, Nick, Leah, Arthur, will you come up here for just a second? Who else? Jake, Griffin, you willing to come up here for a second? Okay, so my idea, and I didn't want to do all the technology. Go walk around, Nick, with this. Just walk up and down the aisles. So my idea of a safe haven is a well-tended garden. Your idea can be different. My idea of an incubator is people with their arms around each other. My idea of a bold model, Arthur, will you walk with that one? My idea of a bold model is, of course, a picture of myself. also put in a picture of John Alou. I also put in a picture of John Alou. Marching in a pride parade, speaking after the Orlando shooting. Good job, Arthur. Bridges is, I think, where our fellowship might have the most diverse ideas right now. And so I picked a couple different pictures of bridges because bridges come in all shapes and sizes. Bridges can be for one person. They can be a huge freeway overpass for big trucks and trains on the side and everything else. Bridges is the area where I think we have the most diversity right now. And then I ran out of kids. No, I didn't. And then a beacon. So when I was summing it up for the kids last week, you got to imagine that the bat signal is actually a little chalice signal there. But the beacon is, what are we putting out there? What are we trying to call people's attention to, and what are we trying to alert people to that can be better in our community? And so those were my ideas. If you're ever kind of lacking a little bit of vision about what you're doing here and what we're trying to achieve, look at our vision statement. See if you're trying to live it yourself. See what images come to your mind to try to make you reflect, be a little bit different, be a little bit better. Thank you.
Now we're going to do the story for all ages. So let's have some children. Let's have some children. Molly, would you sit up front? So Molly was just talking about all those ideas. Anybody remember? My favorite is be a beacon, because that's what I tell people when I'm in the grocery store and I forgot to take my name tag off. And, you know, I'm wandering around town with my name tag on and your kid goes, Mom, and I go, oh, I'm a beacon. Be a beacon. Anybody remember any of the other ones that she said? Catchphrase? Incubator? Growing ideas? Yeah. Safe haven? Beacon? Incubator? Jake? Bridge thing? Be a bridge, building bridges. Arthur? Pictures about someone. That's all of them. Two more. Role models. One more. Rose. The garden thing. Which one was the garden thing?
Safe haven.
Safe haven. Did we count that one already? Uh-oh. We lost track of one. So those are a lot of ideas. And if this was an idea, and I was trying, let's say that's my be a beacon, and I was trying to keep that idea up in the air and out and about all by myself, that would be difficult. Well, not impossible, but, and if I was trying to do be a beacon and safe haven, which was another one of those ideas, well, and I was all by myself, okay, and if I was trying to be a beacon and, oh gosh, a safe haven and a building bridges and, oh, quick, what was another one? Okay, incubator. Oh, what did I lose? Oh, role model. What do you think we need to do? Oh, I can't do it alone. What do I need? Say that again. Other people. Who are the other people in our community that might help us with this process of keeping all these ideas up? Are you ready? Let's stand, because I don't think sitting down is going to do it. Are we ready? All right, here comes a beacon and a safe haven. Can we do it together? Oh. Should we do it only as children? We should have adults help us too. Yeah. Keep them up. Oh. adults are helping. Okay. So clearly, this fellowship has an abundance of good ideas, an abundance of vision, and an abundance of help to help us focus and stay on task with our vision. Thank you all.
Thank you for participating in that. So now, for many people, they find their vision when coming to this church and this fellowship to improve the world around them. And they find that the overlap often comes with today's section of the service, Helping Hands. This fellowship allows us to, in turn, and to turn that vision into reality as we open up the congregation and our hands on second Sundays of every month. This was one of my favorite times and pieces of the service growing up because I heard the speakers talk and bring attention to problems within our community and also by giving solutions to these problems. Today's organization is CASA, and here to speak to you more about it is Stacy Tidwell.
Good morning. As she mentioned, my name is Stacy Tidwell. I'm the executive director of Sunflower CASA. And I might also throw in there, I hate public speaking, so you've probably got the most on-edge, nervous person in front of you. I have been with the agency for a year. I actually started as a volunteer with CASA 20 years ago while I was a student at K-State. It was one of those experiences that left a lifelong impact on me. I worked with a teenager who was placed in foster care. Her mother in particular struggled with drug addiction and had left her on her own. And I worked with this young lady for several years until she aged out of foster care. And I know not a lot of people know what that means, but essentially they turn 18 and they haven't gone back home. They haven't been adopted, or they don't have a guardian, and they're aging out of the foster care system into the real world. And that's actually what guided me for the following 20 years. I went on to work with youth that aged out of foster care, and then I went on to manage that program with DCF administration until a year ago. So that's what brings me before you today. This is an agency that I fully believe in, and its mission and its purpose and the need that it has in our community. We have three programs under Sunflower CASA. I'm told that you guys are pretty CASA savvy. By a show of hands, how many of you know that we have three programs under our agency umbrella? Yay, you are pretty CASA savvy. So the program that I think everybody probably hears the most about is our CASA Core Services. We train volunteers from the community to come alongside children that are involved in the court system. And these are children that are involved due to no reason or behavior on their own. It has to do with their family circumstance. We provide 30 hours of training for, you know, just your average person out there in the community that cares and has a heart to give and for service. And they are appointed to a child through the court system, and they follow this child through a very difficult time while they're involved in what's called a child in need of care case. And we have our advocates, we call them, they're the person. You end up becoming that person for that child. You end up being that one consistent person that's there day in and day out that they can call on. And you become that person. And through being that person, you are creating resilience in them. You are helping them get through what's a very, very difficult time. Last year, in 2017, we had 52 volunteers that served 119 children. These are children from our community, 119. know, every time I say these numbers out loud, they absolutely baffle me, because we like to think that we live in this safe little bubble and that bad things don't happen. But unfortunately, 119 children, and this year alone, we're at 125. So the need and the demand continues. In regards to our volunteers, I brought three flyers that are at the table outside of the door. Please grab them. I hate to see them go to waste. We have volunteer training coming up. It starts on September 25th. They'll meet every Tuesday for 8 Tuesdays in a row from 5:30 to 8:30. We are in desperate need of male volunteers. We have a handful of males that are on our wait list right now for ACASA, especially the males that get above 10. We like to try and have a male volunteer be appointed to them. So if you have any interest at all, I plan to stay around through your service. Please come up to me, ask questions. What we really do ask for is a year-long commitment. Number one, that you do the 30 hours of training. You have to be above the age of 21, go through background checks, and that we ask that you stick it out with your CASA child and that you have contact with them twice a month. So grab one, see me if you have questions. Probably one of the next programs that doesn't get talked about as much is our Stepping Stones Child Advocacy Center. We provide forensic interviews for children who have been sexually abused or extremely physically abused. We have forensic interviewers, licensed master's level social workers, that have been trained to come in and provide an interview for a child so that they have a comprehensive multidisciplinary team behind that interview. Last year alone, we served 90 children through that program. And we are on our 10th anniversary of that program, and unfortunately, we've served close to 700 children through our CAC, which absolutely is a number that disturbs me, that is not okay. With that, you know, our Stepping Stones came into creation, because not a lot of people realize this. I used to be one of those social workers on the front hand where when a child would disclose some type of abuse, you would then have to involve law enforcement, or there might be a teacher that becomes involved, and then you have to get DCF involved, and then you have to have the medical community become involved, and the prosecution attorney. And children were having to tell their story of being victimized over and over and over again, which is incredibly traumatic. If you think about having to relive one of the worst moments of your life and then having to share that 15 times over, our CAC came about so that they could come to our facility in a very child-friendly manner, have everybody behind that door, have that interview be recorded, have someone be trained to ask those questions in a manner that holds up to prosecution. And then also afterwards have follow-up services. We have a staff member that's dedicated to family victim advocacy, and all she does is work with families that have experienced that situation, whether it's child sexual abuse or physical abuse. That's one that probably doesn't get talked about, and it breaks my heart to talk about it, but it's something that exists in our community. It's a need that's out there, and I'm thankful that we have our CAC. You know, prior to that, with children having to disclose their story over and over and over, you know, it led for areas for prosecution to kind of end up having holes poked into things, whereas with our process, it does not. And then the one that probably also gets the least amount of attention is our Sunflower Bridge Child Exchange and Visitation Center. In cases of domestic violence or protection from abuse orders, we provide supervised visits and supervised exchanges so that when a residential parent exchanges with a non-residential parent, it occurs at our facility where we've got trained security, we've got trained observers, typically social workers, that are there to help that visit be child-focused, to keep the accusations between mom and dad out of it, to maintain that there's not any kind of abuse being passed through the child. Last year, we provided 299 visits to children and 24 exchanges. So between these three programs, we served close to 300 children in our community last year. And I would say we're probably edging on 400 this year that we'll probably serve. I was also told to kind of talk about what we do with funds that are donated to our agency. One of the things that is super neat about CASA is that we are able to start what's called our activity fund. And anytime we get donations from things like this, we put that in there where we provide activities for our CASA kids and our CAC kids to participate in what I would call normalizing events. So things that your children or your grandchildren might have participated in. For example, band is one of them, where we just recently purchased a flute for a teenager who came into foster care, ended up switching schools and really wanted to be a part of the band, but came into it to where all the loaner instruments were gone. And so we were able to find somebody in the community that was able to step up and let us purchase a flute from them for $150 so that youth could participate in band. What are some of the other things? This summer, we had a youth that really wanted to do beauty camp through Bellis, which is a week-long event where they learn about everything having to do with the cosmetology industry. We were able to pay for that youth to participate, which was really, really cool. We've paid for some dance lessons for kids. Anything that we can do while they're having this very trying circumstance in their lives go on that promotes normalcy, it also promotes resiliency. It promotes that healthy brain development. And so we have really put a push, you know, with foster care, it's in crisis in Kansas. If you read the news or watch the media, their focus right now is triaging. And so we really tried to step up and come in and provide those kind of things that their services can't. So we're in a unique situation where I really feel like our agency has been able to step up and provide supports to the foster care community that others aren't able to, which is great. A lot of our volunteers end up doing things like transporting kids to sibling visits, to mental health, to parent visits, to different activities. So again, their life is disrupted the least possible. So I do appreciate the opportunity to come here, and I always feel like I kind of bum people out when I come, and that's not the intent. You know, our agency really gets to be that person for that child. We've had staff that I approve time for them to go to choir concerts so they can be that person in the audience for their kid. You know, going to graduation is huge. We've had a lot of staff that get those graduation invites, which is just a monumental kind of thing. So I do want to provide you kind of with a message of hope that, you know, we're out there and we're trucking right along and we're supporting children in really, really difficult times of need. So thank you for giving. I hope I didn't go over my 3 minutes. Thank you for giving me the floor. I appreciate it. You guys have a great Sunday.
And please remember that all funds not explicitly marked as for UUFM will go to Sunflower CASA this morning. And with that, I'll turn our attention to the offertory with Renee and Jeff. With Renee.
Yellow is the color of my true love's hair in the morning when we rise in the morning. When we rise, that's the time, that's the time I love the best. Blue is the color of the sky in the morning. When we rise, in the morning, when we rise, that's the time, that's the time I love the best. Green is the color of the sparkling corn in the morning when we rise. In the morning when we rise, that's the time, that's the time I love the best.
Thank you.
Thank you. We will now... Oh, right. I forgot to mention that you should put your little joys and concern note cards. Well, I forgot about that. That's okay. Did anyone put any joys and concerns note cards? I'll check. I was asked to do this without ever being going through convener training, so my apologies. But today is Dixie's birthday, so let's all give her a round of applause. Thank you for everything you do, Dixie. All right, we'll now go into the next hymn of the day. Just kidding. We're going to our reflection with Jimmy and Sarah Bridges.
Hello, I'm Sarah Bridges, and the little toddler that you see each week running around in circles, that's my little girl, and she's happy to be here, and so am I, and my husband is Jimmy. Do you want to come up, Joan? This is Joan. I'm originally from Arizona, and I grew up Mormon, and my ancestors became Mormon in the 1800s when the Mormon Church was first founded. And about throughout my life, my worldviews and values have changed, and I realized that my mind and heart was changing more rapidly than my childhood church. And so we tried this service about a month ago and fell in love with it. The first week here, I was sobbing after the services, and John, Alu, and Shirley were comforting me, and they didn't quite know why I was crying, but I was crying because I felt so safe, and I felt seen, I felt heard, and I was disturbed by the contrast of my former services versus this services, and just how much my body and soul were just tired and needed a safe place to dwell. And I just felt like I could breathe for the first time in a long time in a service setting. All the principles align with my values, and I've been craving a space like UU for a long time. The first principle says the inherent worth and dignity of every person. My personal vision has been to practice compassion for myself and for others. Brené Brown says, "You are worthy now, not if, not when. You are worthy right this second." I know that if I want my daughter to know this, then I must first practice giving myself compassion and surround myself with spaces that cultivate that value. I have a favorite show on Netflix called Parks and Rec, and in it, Leslie Knope and Ron Swanson, they are very different people, different beliefs, different backgrounds, different goals, and I'm touched by how they are friends and how they respect each other and how they work together, even though they're so different, to create the common good for people. And that is a personal goal that I've been practicing, and something that I feel here at UU goes along with the principle respect for the interdependent web of all experiences of which we are a part. And I know we're all spiritually connected, and I want to... help my daughter see that it's not us versus them. We're actually all on the same team, and we are grateful to be here. Thank you.
Well, she gave a great introduction. I'm Jimmy. Sorry, my thing's... I'm Jimmy Bridges. I'm so glad I found this place. My major professor, I've told some of you this, is Amber Venom at K-State. So Amber and Drew, I had heard, had been going here, and then life got really busy for him. So vision. So like I said, attending K-State and the Couple and Family Therapy Program, that's changed a lot of kind of how my vision has changed as a person. I joined the church, the LDS church or Mormon church, when I was 19, and my wife and I met up at Brigham Young University, Idaho. Since that time, it's been 10 years, a little over 10 years now, I've increasingly felt that my perspective on life makes many LDS church leaders uncomfortable. If I were to guess, my views on people, politics, and relationships, to them at least, are incompatible with Mormonism. After many tiresome months just recently of attempting to convince them otherwise, I have decided to take a break from that community. So here I am, or here we are. So my personal vision, I feel, is directly tied to my roles as a therapist, a researcher, a husband, and a father. In my therapy, I utilize feminist-informed theories to address inequality in relationships. In my research, I study the conflicts that occur for LGBTQ people raised in conservative religious communities, specifically within the Mormon communities. And in my own life, I've challenged and continue to challenge my own toxic masculinity and heteronormative assumptions about how relationships should look. When I first looked over the UU principles, the seven principles, I was shocked. I could not believe that there was an organization that aligned so closely with the principles that guided so much of my life. Particularly principle number one, the inherent worth and dignity of every person, and principle number four, a free and responsible search for truth and meaning, that was what I felt was already guiding so much of my life and my attempts at advocating for this kind of perspective in the Mormon community. They didn't like that. I should be careful of how I generalize. At least the current situation, the current community didn't like that. Mormon congregations vary depending on region, but there's some generalizations we can make. So these two examples, these two principles, could be used as mission statements for my life up to this point. My decision to join the UU community for the time being came from a belief that I hold for myself, the belief that I want to strive to be congruent in all that I do. In other words, I want to be able to be myself in all the roles that I occupy in life. And if there is any role I want to be the most me in, it is the role I occupy in my faith and spiritual community. Thank you.
Now it's time. Please stand as you are able for hymn number 318.
Thank you.
Thank you for sticking along through all of this. So looking at my own personal journey with vision, not quite that old, with vision and this fellowship, one story specifically comes to mind. There was a time in my life when every night I would pray before I went to bed. At the time, I would say that I was praying to God. I didn't really know who God was, and I didn't know what God I was praying to, but I had never really heard of anyone praying in any other way or to something else. What I realized as I got older, though, and really just a few times into doing this, is that I wasn't praying to a Jesus in order to redeem my soul or to talk to a God. I had other motives. One of them is probably kind of disrespectful to some people who really do believe in prayer, but I find prayer extremely boring sometimes, and it helped me fall asleep. Before bed, sometimes I needed this. It was a way for me to just think, and it usually put me right to bed. But beyond that, and probably more importantly, is that it reminded me every day to be grateful for everything that was in my life. And it helped me lay out my hopes for the next day, the next week, and the future. And again, then, as I got older, I realized that I didn't really need to accomplish these things by praying to a God. In fact, I realized this while I was at a social event for a Southern Baptist church in town. Someone said, "What would change in the world if God answered all of your prayers overnight?" This was meant to push kids to think beyond themselves while praying, to think about the world and pray for more than just their individual problems. But what it made me realize was, why was I praying to a God that would magically cure everything overnight because they had the power, when I could cure these things by working day in and day out for them? Since I wasn't praying for salvation, this worked for me. I realized that if I wanted things to change, whether I wanted them to change in my personal life or more broadly, I didn't need to talk to something I didn't really believe was there or was sure existed at all. Why not actually write down everything that I was grateful for and write down my vision for what I wanted to happen? So I started doing this. This change of perspective happened around my freshman year of high school, and I started to become more intentional in my exploration and practice of my beliefs. I did this through Unitarian Universalism and RE classes, as well as just in my life more broadly. I didn't have to be at church to think spiritually and to think about what I wanted from the world. I soon ditched my classic prayer technique. To fall asleep, I used meditation techniques that were taught to me here in this building, ones that I hated at the time but proved useful later on. More significantly, I realized that I used prayer as a goal-setting session, and I didn't have to do this while falling asleep. I could instead be intentional and write down and carry with me what my vision was for the next day, the next week, and the rest of my life. So I turned to a form of prayer in my mind of writing down my goals on a piece of paper and carrying that paper with me always. This is my piece of paper that I carried with me for the last year or so, a little more. There's a lot on here, and I split it into three different sections. I actually wrote this at student council camp, so there's four, so we'll disregard the fourth. But I had goals for things that I wanted to do always, things that I wanted to do that year, my senior year of high school, and things that I wanted to do in life and in my future. Some of these goals, about half or so, were extremely and easily measurable. I could tell whether I accomplished them or not, whether it was the goal to place in the top three in international extemp speaking at state in forensics, improving my GPA, getting into the school of my dreams. But I also had more long-term and also easily measurable goals, like visiting all 50 states and running for political office one day. Beyond these, however, thanks. We'll see if that happens. That might have changed. It did not make it onto this one. Okay. But others weren't quite as subjective, and I couldn't really measure clearly whether or not I had accomplished them. I tried, but these goals were those such as spreading joy wherever I go. This one I struggle with, but also learning from other people and pursuing what I love. When I look at these, both the objective and subjective goals, I accomplish, I think, over half of them. When I look at the completely subjective, I only accomplished 4 or 5 of the 9. We'll put that at a 50% success rate. I'm very goal-driven. Obviously, I carry these around me all the time. And so it was kind of hard for me to realize that I didn't get into Northwestern University. I didn't triple qualify to nationals and do all of these things. But when I take a step back, I realized I still had an amazing year. The vision of what was truly important, of learning from others and teaching others, still held. And they held through quite a lot of trials. Some of you have heard about them. Some of them were quite public. One day, for instance, in December, on a single day, I found out that I got rejected from 3 different programs and schools that I had been dreaming about for years. But because of that, the next day, I applied to 2 different scholarships at Kansas State University and led me to be where I am, standing you in front of you today. I ended up staying home. I'm living in the dorms, but home in Manhattan. And because of that decision, because I was able to stay in Manhattan, another extremely eventful life event, I landed in the hospital, not because of that, but I landed in the hospital this past year. I was intensive treatment for about a week and had outpatient treatment for another 2. No one really knew what was wrong or why it was happening. I had an abscess that had formed, and there were multiple different causes that could have led to my hospitalization. This was kind of terrifying. As an 18-year-old who hadn't been to the doctor since the 7th grade, I had no idea what was going on and had never even had my blood drawn before having 4 IVs in my arm. So it was an interesting time, but especially because of the community that I felt here in Manhattan, it was easier. I stayed in Manhattan for many reasons. But thankfully, because of those reasons, I don't have to find a new team of doctors to describe my case to when transitioning to a school. I can see the same ones, and I have the same network to support me, particularly the Ferguson Mayfield family, because when I was eventually, a few months later, diagnosed with Crohn's disease, they were able to offer advice. So now, moving forward. These set of goals no longer apply to my life. Some of them still do, the future and always. But when I looked ahead, I had a much different context. Through all of these scares and failures and many successes, I realized that I needed to change it. So, a few weeks ago, when sitting in my dorm room for the first time at my desk, my first assignment to myself was to come up with a new set of goals. They look a lot different. They still are in a triangle shape, because I liked that. But when I look at the actual goals, only 2 of the 5 are subjective. Last year, I knew what I was going to be doing. I had a clear vision and a clear plan for what was going on in my life. While that certainly changed, it was relatively clear what organizations I would be involved in, my role within clubs, what classes would be like, what teachers would be like, where I would go almost every single weekend, because I had my life planned down to that of a T. That's not the case this year. I don't even know some of my professors' name yet, which is so weird to me, but I don't know what class will be like. I have yet to have my first exam. It's hard to decide what I want my GPA to look like. I have no idea what clubs I will be a part of in 4 months, let alone 4 years. Everything on my list this year is pretty broad. I've left myself a wide vision to create and to follow for the next year and the next 4 years. All of these items take little bits of effort, little steps in efforts to improve my vision and to improve my place in the world. And when I look at these little steps and these little things that I want to do, they also closely align with things that I've learned here. When I look at the back of the program and see vision, I see the words like incubator and bridge builder and teacher, things that I want to be, things that I want to spread and learn and teach are included within this fellowship. In high school and in middle school, I tried to find lots of different things and places to go to look for answers for what I wanted to do in the world. But eventually, I looked inside myself most often. And while I think this is still important, and I still look inside myself for these answers all the time, it's nice to have a framework of things to believe in and a network of people to support me. That is this congregation. UUFM, the place I had gone to my entire life, I realized was actually pretty nice. It provided vision and, more importantly, provided plans on how to achieve my personal vision. The fellowship had efforts to improve the world through creating community, social justice work, and working to respect all people at its core, very similar to my core. I love that Unitarian Universalism and this fellowship puts these efforts first, last, and everywhere in between. Unlike other churches or religions that might put good works and good efforts like these first, but follow up with a heavy dose of evangelicalism, Unitarians don't do that. It is the beginning, middle, and end. I realized I didn't need to turn to other places. I just needed to turn here. I like the Unitarian belief system currently. Maybe that'll change. Maybe. We'll see. I've changed in the past. I've attended Southern Baptist Church activities. I grew up going to a Mennonite summer camp every single year. But through UU, I have learned infinitely more about the world and my place in it and how I view myself through it. Maybe, again, I'll feel differently. But even in a time when my own vision is unclear, it's comforting to attend a place with a clear vision, somewhat. This is also another piece that I like about Unitarian Universalism. Other religions, specifically Christianity, because it's the one I'm most familiar with, provides you with a clear and solid vision of what the future will look like. Far in the future, there is heaven. It is up to you to decide, for the most part, how you will get there. They provide a framework, but the action falls on you. At this church, though we have the 6 guiding visions, we all have our own vision of what the future will look like. And we can decide that if we really don't like the bridge building one, we don't really have to participate in those communities and or actions, and no one will hate you for it. I also have learned that through this time in my 4 years of being more intentional about practicing goal setting and developing my Unitarian Universalist belief system, I've actually seen a concrete way that I can measure this. In my freshman year here, because of Molly McGoy, she had us take a personality test of sorts. It was a strengths test that Kansas State University uses to help students realize where their strengths are in certain areas. When I took this test the first time, I received strengths that were in logical areas, things like analytical, or strengths in analytics, strengths in learning, strengths in receiving information. I took this test again as a K-State freshman, and my strengths changed. My top 5 strengths were relator, I'm able to relate to people, is what that means essentially, responsibility, achiever, connectedness, and learner. When I look at the definitions of these through the K-State and Clifton strengths, they look a little worryingly, but good, like the UU principles. Connectedness is a clear connection to Principle 7, the interconnected web of all things, but also relates to the inherent worth and dignity of every person, because we all deserve a piece in this connection. Relator looks exactly like this fellowship, creating communities to achieve goals and work towards change. And learning. That is what this place is about. Principle number 4, as well as others, the free and responsible truth for meaning, relies on me and my own journey, not just on someone else's. So moving forward, and what does this have to do with this service at all? I don't know. but that's my story. And I find that in Unitarian Universalism, I am able to express myself and hopefully create change in this fellowship and in this community. I find personal goals in achieving new positions and new things. That's why I, for whatever reason, agreed to do this service and also agreed to be a member at large on the board. I'm learning more every single day through this congregation, and because of that, it has provided me to what I think honestly be an embodiment of what many people think that the vision of this fellowship should be. 70% of Unitarians did not grow up Unitarian. They transitioned. However, one of our vision statements and a piece of the vision statement says that we want to grow lifelong UUers. Well, you're successful in this case, at least. Maybe not in all, but hopefully in most. I see myself as someone to live out the UU vision and hopefully make you all proud. Maybe I'll run for office, and maybe you can give me campaign donations, though that's not what I asked for or hoped for by doing this service. But instead, I ask for your guidance and your help when figuring out my vision in this uncertain time of what I truly want to do. While I have an idea, I hope that maybe one day it will become a little clearer and will hopefully always include this fellowship. So now, I'd like to turn it all over to you. You've heard many stories today about personal vision, and I'm frankly curious why everyone is here and how they think the fellowship can serve them. If you would like to share, please feel free. Also, consider, hopefully you have been considering the vision statement, and whether or not these pieces particularly speak to you. My mom says that the beacon piece particularly speaks to her, but when I asked her if incubator did, she wasn't quite sure. But she's the director of religious education. She is definitely an incubator. She is humble in her piece of this fellowship and in the creation of my UU-ness. So I invite you to take a step back and think about what you actively participate in, whether you want to or not, and what piece of the vision speaks to you. So yeah, does anyone have anything to add? Yeah, thanks. Hopefully. Jean Sievers has a mic, yeah.
Thanks, Lily, that was great. I think the part that speaks to me the most, not many will be surprised, Mark Mayfield, by the way, is the interconnectedness of all life, because I think that's, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm a biologist, or maybe it's the other way around. But anyway, yeah, definitely I think that's has a lot of value. Anybody else?
Les Slashke. Yeah, I just also would say that the seventh one is the one that really speaks to me as well. The interconnectedness of all of existence of which we're a part. And that's, to me, the deepest spiritual component. And to me, that is summed up in the word, the Greek word, cosmos. And I really feel like that's it. I would call myself an atheist, but the one thing that I associate most closely with the word God is cosmos, which is the interconnectedness of all things.
Look, Larry Weaver, the thing that plays itself out in my life the most is the first principle, the inherent worth and dignity of every person. But I really like the way you do it in the RE program. You say, each person is worthwhile. year or so ago, I learned a new word from my wife. The word is fungible. Like a dollar bill is fungible. Any dollar bill, if you want a dollar bill from me, I can give you any dollar bill. I could even give you 2 50-cent pieces. Money is fungible. People are not fungible. That's what the insight of principle number one gives to me. And that has that affects my life every day, from when I'm talking with a barista in a coffee shop or when a student used to come into my office. I'd tell myself, this person's worthwhile. Shut up and listen to him. And so that's what I most relate to in this congregation and in my life.
I just want to say, my name is Rob DeLong, by the way. I really like our vision statement. And in our lab, we grow a lot of different cells. And it occurs to me today that in our body, we have many different kinds of cells. In liver cells, skin cells, right, brain cells. It takes all those cells to make the body go round. It takes all of us to make this church and community go round. By the way, the Parks and Rec thing, Leslie Knope and what was the other guy's name? That was absolutely beautiful. So those of us who are familiar with that show, yes, that was a very good welcome. Thank you.
Susan Adamchak. I think I would echo Larry's observation about the importance of the first principle for me, but certainly I find it difficult to separate it from the second of endorsing justice, equity, and compassion in human relations. I feel so blessed in my life to have been able to speak with presidents and sex workers, I mean, not at the same time, but... you know, to just have had that range of experience and to understand that we ultimately are all seeking the same goals, you know, of safety for our children, as our visitor spoke of so eloquently. You're actually a very accomplished public speaker. You should feel good about what you did today. but, you know, we want our kids to be safe. We want education. We want good health. And that's what everyone I've ever encountered in my journey once, and I value that we put that so front and forward in our statement of beliefs.
And for me, as a parent, I think the acceptance of one another has been really important to me as a parent. In that, I mean, it's important for everyone, regardless of our age, but. What I've really appreciated about this congregation is that we accept all of our children for who they are and who they are becoming, and we don't put a box set of norms that they have to fit in on them, where I feel like they get that so many other places in their life. It's so nice that they can come here and just be loved and accepted for who they are and who they are becoming.
After Leschke, what, Mike? No. Anyway, after he spoke, he reminded me they were sitting behind us. I think it was the first Sunday they came. It was at the Sunday after Trump had been elected. What's wrong with this? Is that, I can hear. Anyway, we were introducing ourselves to each other, and he said it was their first Sunday here. He said, we had to do something after that election to decompress. And I want to tell you, Doug has me trying out this special, this thing, to it's a microcoil thing, and it feeds directly through this to my hearing aids, which have a special setting, and I have heard almost every single word today for the first time.
To build on the note of the children growing up thing, I feel like something I always think about with Unitarian Universalism is I came into it when I was 14. I was a freshman in high school. I found it on my own, actually, because I just began a search, and I was worried because a lot of my experiences, especially in middle school, I went through like that edgy goth kid phase, black hair, etc. And I was attacked a lot by my friends who claimed to be Christian and would have people like viciously just describe about like how I was going to hell and all this sort of stuff and invite me to their youth group where they would just kind of attack me over it. And like, honestly, I was a little worried trying to find something I could like felt where I'd belong. I just remember walking into the fellowship in Topeka, actually, when I was 14. And the first person I talked to just talking about how everyone's accepted here and I never felt out of place. And instantly I just fit in well with the youth group. And so I feel like that's like something I just really, I love about both the vision statement and just Unitarian Universalism in general, is just that, you know, that feeling of acceptance. I've never once felt attacked. It's a community where we can speak our minds and come to decisions based on debate, and we're not told how we should believe things or, you know, anything like that. And I just appreciate that. So, and I'm Link, by the way.
So I'll try to condense. I've been here a long time, so I've kind of had like multiple iterations of myself while I was here. When I first started, I was 21, and I started with drum circle with Pat Embers, and I was just a young mom and a K-State student trying to figure out how to be an adult. And I was traditionally married and just, you know, sort of learning who I was as a human adult. And then, I guess it's been 2 years now. My husband decided to transition to being a female. And then I was having like a crisis because UUs aren't supposed to care about things like that. But like my whole gender identity and whether we were going to stay married and things like that all went up in the air. And then a year later, it was we got immediately divorced because he had molested both of my children. And my whole world like just shattered. And the UU church adapted through everything. Like, it didn't matter what I was going through, who I was judging, like myself or my husband or anything. They're always there for me. And another church could not have done that at all. So thank you.
Regarding the inherent worth and dignity of every person, which I think is says so much, I think every person refers to big people and little people. I had a project visitor in Romania, and he was talking down to the children, and I say that very specifically, and asked one little boy who's about four what he needed or what he wanted. He wanted a wading pool or a swimming pool or something. And he said, well, I'll have to talk to the people about that. And he said, I'm a people too. And I realized at that time how often we interpret what children mean when they say something. We speak for them. We try to think for them. And we don't listen to them directly enough. And I try every time I talk to a child to really listen to what they're saying and respect their dignity and their value in our society.
Michael Oldfather, that first part of it, the worth and dignity of all people, I struggle with dealing with people who do not believe that. I can empathize with Muslims who live close to who live in Israel, or with Buddhists or with Muslims who made the mistake of living with allegedly accepting Buddhists and found out that's not true. But anyway, I have a lot of I have to say, I have to work on keeping my anger under control when I see evidence of people who clearly do not believe in the worth and dignity of people who are not like them. I'm working on it, and I'm trying to get better. Don't pray for me.
Oh, yeah, it's 12 o'clock. Right, that's my job to keep track of. All right, thank you all for sharing. I am encouraged by all of you and hope that one day we can all have these visions come true. And one of the ways that I like to act in vision is through love, and I think that was something we all talked about. So please join us for hymn number 131, Love Will Guide Us. I leave you with the quote that I inscribed on the back of this year's goal sheet. From Kalpana Chawla, the path from dreams to success does exist. May you have the vision to find it, the courage to get on it, and the perseverance to follow it. Thank you.